You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Play in Alberta, everything stays in Alberta. Revenues from Play Alberta stay in the province. Can help get the Hen Day built. This and Joe, it's there's always seems to be an interesting offseason in Boston. This year, like, the Bruins were one of the healthiest teams in the NHL last year, and you know, that's rare to go from year to year healthy. And they're going to start the season more banged up than they were at any point last year. They got some serious injuries, specifically to McAvoy and Marchand and Matt Greslick. Are they built? Let's start on the defense to withstand that type of blow with two key defenders.
Yeah, it's not just the injuries, right? It's the players and the personnel that you're missing. Brad Marchand out until U.S. Thanksgiving. Charlie McAvoy and Matt Grizzlick, arguably your best two puck-moving defensemen, are going to be out after off-season shoulder surgeries for a while. So you're going to be missing a lot of offensive ability, a lot of players that have the puck on their stick quite a bit for the first 4, 6, 8 weeks of the season. And, you know, some of it on the back end is just going to be getting by with what they have. Jakub Sporl does come back from a knee injury that he had that he missed almost all of last year due to, and he can play either side, so I think he's going to be a big factor. Obviously, Hampus Lindholm is a guy who is going to be relied on heavily the first month, 6 weeks of the season before McAvoy comes back. He's going to be, I'm sure, a minutes muncher big time as far as ice time goes, playing in all situations. And I think they're going to spread out, you know, they're going to have Lindholm on the top pairing, obviously. They're going to have Carlo on the second pairing, and then it'll be Mike Riley on the second pairing. Maybe Sporl on the right side with Hampus Lindholm. You know, you've got Connor Clifton, you've got Forbort there as well. They've got some D, at least, to start the year that they can play around with. But there's no magical solutions or magic bullets on the back end if you're missing McAvoy and Grizzlick. That's going to hurt. Up front, it's a little more concrete as to what they're going to do. They're going to put Pavel Zacha on the left side with Patrice Bergeron and Jake DeBrusque in Marchand's spot to start the year. Kind of let him learn the Bruins' way on the left side with Patrice Bergeron. Sort of, you know, indoctrinate him to the Bruins that way. Maybe get him to shoot the puck a little bit more if he's playing with those players. And go from there. You know, they'll obviously have to make adjustments if they need to, but I think they'd like to keep Taylor Hall, David Krejci, and David Pastrnak as a second line intact when Marchand is out, if they can get by offensively.
It really feels like this team's at a transition point. We look at how many UFAs after this year, but, you know, how much does this kind of start and end this conversation of the future with David Pastrnak? Where is that, and where are Bruins fans' psyches at in this situation?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of nervousness, right? I mean, they watch a team like Calgary go through it with Johnny Gaudreau last year, thinking he's probably going to be back and not really knowing. And, you know, he never gives any indication. And then all of a sudden when free agency opens, they're left holding the bag. And, you know, they made him a nice recovery. Calgary did. Give them credit for that. But I think the Bruins don't want that same kind of situation. They want more certainty if they can get it. But, you know, right now the two sides are talking. I don't think they're relatively close or anywhere near close. I get the sense that David Pastrnak wants to be the highest paid player on the team, and he deserves it, frankly. And, you know, over the $10 million a year mark. I think he's very comparable numbers, better numbers than Jonathan Huberdeau, who signed that $84 million deal with Calgary. So he's certainly got comparables out there that show him that he should be making that kind of money. And I think for the Bruins, it comes down to how they want to manage their cap situation. I think all teams right now seem to be avoiding paying their players $10 million a year or more if they can help it.
I think we might have lost Joe. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, hello. You're back now. Yeah, we got you.
You got me? I think a lot of teams are following that Tampa Bay Lightning model of not paying players more than $10 million a year. And, of course, every GM knows no team has won a cup with a $10 million a year player yet. So I think there's a wariness to start paying him a ton and have, you know, maybe Pastrnak and McAvoy be 25% of your salary cap just on those two alone. So I think there's a chasm right now. I think he said all the right things the other day, Pastrnak, about wanting to be here long-term and it being his home and him wanting to stay. But I think there's definitely a lot of nervousness around the Bruins as to locking him up and making sure he's a part of the future, and wariness that if he's not going to sign and you realize that and you kind of read the tea leaves there, to try to get some value for you so that he doesn't Gaudreau you like Johnny did to Calgary.
Yeah, I can understand that. I will say, though, like Tampa had three guys at 9.5 when they won.
Right.
So, you know,
but,
and with the cap, like the thing is, we just saw McKinnon go up significantly. And I agree with you on David Pastrnak. He's, you know, he's got a real strong case. There's no reason he's not going to be a $10 million player, especially with all the projections that the cap is going to jump up. And really, the Bruins, you know, right now you got Foligno, Pavel Zacha, Craig Smith, Patrice Bergeron. Like, they got a boatload of guys. I think they only have four forwards in Marchand, Hall, Coyle, and DeBrusk who are signed currently past next season. So, you know, they will definitely have the room if they want to bump him up because, to me, usually when you pay your best guys, and he would be 27, I think, when that deal kicks in, like, he's not going to be a guy at 30, right? Like, I see no reason why Pastrnak wouldn't be a guy if you're the Bruins you'd want to lock up long term. Is there anything that I don't see from afar that would give you pause to sign him long term?
No, I don't think there is. I think he's hungry to win a cup. He doesn't have one like his buddies Krejci, Bergeron, and Marchand do. So the hunger is there for him to win. He's just entering his best years. He's gonna score 50 goals one of these seasons. And a guy that plays hard. We'll pay attention to defense. We'll do some of the little things. Is a kind of a winning player that also has the talent to score 50 goals. Like, those guys are not, you know, those guys are mythical creatures. There's not many of them around. So if you have one, you certainly want to lock him up long term. I don't think there's any hesitation. The Bruins are saying the right things. They want to make him a lifetime Bruin and give him a contract that's going to run through for the rest of his career potentially. So, you know, they definitely want to keep him. And, you know, as to what you were saying before, like, I understand that you've got to pay your players, but in this day and age with the salary cap, a difference between 10.5 and 9.5 a year, $1 million a year, that can get you a quality seventh defenseman. That can get you a pretty good fourth line player. You know, that they're trying to save as much as they can to build a roster as well as they can with as much depth as they can. So they're cutting their coupons and saving their pennies whenever they can.
When you look at David Krejci returning, you know, what would be reasonable expectations for his performance offensively this year?
I think he could be primed for one of his best offensive seasons with Taylor Hall and Pastrnak on either side of him. You know, that goes back to he hasn't had talent like that on either side of him since the Milan Lucic, Nathan Horton days, you know, when Iginla came in after that, Iginla and Lucic on his two sides. He always has had the last, you know, 4 or 5 years kind of this, like, rotating wingers on one side. He'll have one pretty good winger, and they'll have another where it's just they're trying to fill the spot. So you give him two finishers with the playmaking abilities that he has, I easily see him, you know, 20 goals, 20-plus goals, getting to the 60 to 70-point range. Like, he's going to have an excellent year. And I don't put a lot of stock into saying, oh, he went and played in Europe for a year, he's going to, you know, have to catch up to the speed or catch up to the quality of play or anything like that. Like, the guy I saw in World Championships, the guy I saw in the highlights in Czech is the same exact David Krejci he's always been. And I think he's just going to hit the ground running back with the Bruins, the same team, with all his familiar people around him. And he's going to have an excellent year. And the real question when it comes down to Bergeron and Krejci for me, at the ages that they are, 36, 37 years old, it's not the regular season. I think they're both capable of having excellent regular seasons. The place where the rubber meets the road with them is really the playoffs. And having your top two centers be 36, 37 years old, if you have aspirations to go on a Stanley Cup run, playing every other night, playing high leverage minutes, playing a ton for a 2-month stretch if you want to win the Stanley Cup is a lot to ask of guys that are 36, 37 years old. Which speaks to the urgency the Bruins have about getting a younger center that's in the prime of his career that can play top six instead of relying on guys that maybe you want to slide down in the lineup in a little bit as they're getting older.
Joe Haggerty joins us, Edmonton Sports Leader, TSN 1260. Joe, how different are the Bruins going to be? I know Jake DeBrusk comes in probably a little bit lighter with the coaching change. What do you make of the coaching change?
Yeah.
Was it the right decision?
I mean, we'll see, right, when the season starts, if it was the right decision or not. We'll see how it goes. I wrote a column the other day because I remarked when we were at the Boston Bruins Foundation Golf Tournament a few days ago, which is kind of their annual kickoff of training camp and hockey season starting, there was more than one player that talked about a softer touch from Jim Montgomery. you know, a softer approach for some of the players on the Boston Bruins roster. And this was coming from veteran players. And it, whenever you hear soft in hockey terms, it makes your ears perk up, because it's not a term that any hockey player or hockey person really uses in complimentary fashion most of the time, except for soft hands, right? So, you know, is it going to work? Is catering a little bit to more of the younger generation of players going to be the right move and going to unlock their games and get the best out of them? You know, like Taylor Hall was saying, he's curious to see how much these players can flourish under a different coach, some of these players that maybe were struggling under Bruce Cassidy. But we may find out that these are the same players with different coaches that have the same, you know, strengths and weaknesses and the same issues, and it turns into the soft approach doesn't work with them, and it gets back to what it was before. You know, they're aiming for a guy that can speak to the younger generation a little bit better, communicate with them, get the best out of them, maybe give them more rope and more slack to make mistakes and, you know, not be as hard line with them as Bruce Cassidy was in the past. But I'm curious and interested to see how that's going to play out in actuality on the ice. But, you know, at the end of the day, this leadership group is strong enough and there's enough talent here that I think they're going to be good either way. And I'm not sure the coaching is going to be the thing that either holds them back or puts them over the top.
One last one for you, Joe. It's Daniel Char announced officially that he's retiring. I guess, what's his legacy there with the Bruins? And all, like, is he ranked as one of the greatest Bruins of all time?
I think we might have lost him, Struds. I think we might have lost him.
So. That's it. He's
got to be up there. I don't think there's any question about that, right? Like, yeah, there's Bobby Orr.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you think about that organization: Bobby Orr, Ray Bourque, Zdeno Chara as defensemen in different decades and eras, right?
Yeah, those are.
We got
three.
Joe back, so let's ask him again.
You guys hear me?
Yeah, sorry, Joe. I was just wondering, though, obviously, Zdeno Chara retires. You know, where does he rank as far as all-time greats with the Bruins?
No, I mean, he's near the top. You know, I arguably the best captain they've ever had. Stanley Cup champion. Iconic player. You know, just for his generation, he is the best defensive defenseman, the most fearsome defenseman, you know, that played for the last, you know, 15-plus years. Larger than life, the tallest player that's ever played at 6'9", so he stands out in that nature. Just when you think of his legacy, you think of hard work, toughness, winning, so many of the things that Boston Bruins fans love and so many of the things that they value and cherish most. And, you know, iconic moments along the way, too. The 2019 Stanley Cup Final, when he had a broken jaw and nobody thought he was going to play, and he comes right back out, doesn't miss a game, and plays against the St. Louis Blues. You know, it's those kind of things that you look at and you say that was something special that was going on in Boston while he was captain and while he was leader. And there is zero question in my mind that he changed the culture when he came in 2006 as a free agent, best free agent signing in NHL history, and really changed the trajectory of the franchise back to a playoff team, three Stanley Cup finals, Stanley Cup championship. They don't do any of that if Char is not there. I think he's a no-doubt Hall of Famer in a couple of years, and his 33 is going to be up in the rafters at TD Garden sooner rather than later.
Joe, always good to catch up with you, man. We appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
You got it, guys. Take care.